This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. It's the day after the 4th of July. Busy day to sleep in after a great day of fireworks, family, and all the above from the 4th of July. I'm Austin Bechtold, pleased to be with you as the Pirates were part of the fireworks last night in Los Angeles on the negative end for the LA faithful. Great comeback effort from the Buccos. And game that went back and forth, seemed like it was just one of those games that the Pirates were going to potentially find a way to lose. And in every aspect of it, the Pirates did what they needed to, scoring early, scoring late. A great thing to do is score more runs than the other team. And the Pirates responded, though, probably the best takeaway that you can get out of the game, to everything that the Dodgers threw at them. Pirates scored two runs in the first inning to get it going. Nick Gonzalez, ground rule double to left, scored Henry Davis and Carlos Santana with two outs and the bases loaded in the top half of the first inning. It was a struggle for the Dodgers starter Sheehan on the mound. 3 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 5 earned. He did walk 4 as well. 4 strikeouts allowed. Emmett Sheehan, a 23-year-old young pitcher for the Dodgers that has not done too well this year. 4.35 total ERA, has had his moments. But for the Buccos to be able to get it going, and then in the bottom half of the first inning, it was not a great start for Luis Ortiz. He gave up on a couple of different occasions, solid amount of runs, including in the bottom half of the second, a two-run shot to James Outman, who was not done on the day. That was his 10th, scoring Jason Hayward. That put the Dodgers ahead 3-2 after an earlier run in the inning. Mookie Betts, being a part of it, he homered, as Betts was the third run to come across the plate. Fourth run, as the Dodgers led 4-2 at that point after scoring that one in the first. But the Pirates in the fourth were not done. Jack Sawinski hit his 18th home run of the season to cut it to a one-run ball game again. Andrew McCutchen had a chance with two on and one out to be able to help the cause. Was not able to do so as Brian Reynolds helped to put the Pirates back on top 5-4. Being able to bring home Jared Triolo. And for the Buccos, just overall, once again, bottom half of the fourth inning, James Outman, two-run home run. Dodgers go back ahead 6-5. Pirates were trying to respond in the top of the fifth inning, not able to do so. Rodolfo Castro struck out swinging. Three pitches that he swung on that, honestly, he never had a shot at. The last pitch of the at-bat on a full count, outside half of the plate. Good pitch for him to swing at. Didn't make any contact. The previous two strikes on him were not in the strike zone. They were balls inside, cutters, off-speed pitches that got him fooled. Rodolfo Castro, we'll get to him in a little bit. This is his struggles continue. But in the top half of the sixth inning, Henry Davis singled to tie the game back up at 6, and it looked like in the bottom half of the eighth inning that this was it. Johnny DeLuca hit his first home run off of Jose Hernandez back in the fold with one out on a 3-2 pitch in the bottom of the eighth inning, and at that point, the way things have been trending for the Pirates, you'd think the game might be over. Carlos Santana struck out swinging in the top of the ninth, but Jack Sawinski was able to get on base. Nick Gonzalez walked after a 3-1 count, and Jared Triolo singled, line drive to center field. James Outman with a little bit of a bobble. Jack Sawinski scored, Gonzalez to third, and Triolo was able to advance to second, and that made it a tie ball game at 7. And for the Buccos, Josh Palacios, opposite field, a little flare in the left, ended up going down as a double with Nick Gonzalez, Jared Triolo, both scoring, and David Bednar able to close it out in the bottom half of the ninth inning. Evan Phillips, the blown save, the Dodgers closer, not able to get the job done for LA. It's good to see the Pirates being able to get to opposing closers because theirs has been so solid, tremendous. David Bednar, the way that he's performed this year, and being named to the National League All-Star team yesterday as well. Luis Ortiz, 3 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, walked 1, 3 strikeouts, 3 home runs as well. But the bullpen, very solid, very solid. It was Angel Perdomo, rather, not Jose Hernandez, who gave up the solo home run. Carmen Majewski, 1 innings pitched, 1 strikeout. How about Ryan Borucki? Has started to come into his own a little bit. Does still have a very high ERA in the seventh. A 1-inning pitch, he struck out every batter that he was able to get out. Colin Holderman, 1 2/3 innings, gave up 1 walk. Other than that, pretty clean. No hits, no runs came across the plate. Perdomo and Jose Hernandez is working his way back into the fold. One of the top lefties in the Pirates bullpen. Angel Perdomo has started to form into a solid and consistent lefty. He's had his moments positively and negatively. Negatively being the only when he was coming in for relief of Colin Holderman. Saw that he was able to do that, but also the Bucks went to the bullpen and being able to get Bednar in there for 1 2/3. A 5-out save for Bednar. Gave up 1 hit, 1 walk. 2 strikeouts, an ERA of 1.36. David Bednar, very deserving All-Star, as Clayton Kershaw went on the injured list for the LA Dodgers, and it opened up a spot for Bednar to be able to make the All-Star team. And it seemed that Derek Shelton was so confident Bednar would make it that he brought Icy Light on the plane to be able to give to his closer for making it for a second consecutive season. It's not like that you find that naturally in Los Angeles. I've been out there once earlier this year for the Rose Bowl, and you just do not find anything Icy Light Pittsburgh-related in L.A. So it shows the confidence that David Bednar had that his closer was going to make it to the All-Star game at some point, that somebody would drop out or there would be an injury or a starting pitcher would pitch 1, 2 days, 3 days before the All-Star game, that they would be not rested enough to be able to give it a go, and they'd have to find a replacement for him. But Bednar has been tremendous. It took 2 months for him to walk a batter unintentionally. He's 3-0 with a 1.36 ERA, 32 appearances, 16 saves, 33 innings, 39 strikeouts, a .91 whip. David Bednar on the season has only walked 5 batters. 2 of those were intentional walks. A .205 opposing batting average. He has been tremendous, has only had 1 blown save, and he is well-deserving of going back to the All-Star game representing the Pirates and joining Mitch Keller. Also, tons of speculation with the upcoming MLB draft. Draft is this Sunday. It seems like we keep talking about it and keep talking about it, and it just is a ways away, but no. It is fastly and very fastly approaching to where the point of the Pirates will have the ultimate decision to make of who to take number one. Will it be either the LSU big guns, Dylan Cruz, Paul Skenes? Will it be Wyatt Lankford or even a high school prospect? I talked to Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline earlier in the week about his thoughts on all the prospects, but especially Dylan Cruz and Paul Skenes and where he projects those guys to be currently at the moment and where he would go if he was the Pirates at number one overall. I'll tell you what he had to say coming up next here on the Fan Early Morning Show. And the Fan Early Morning Show here today, the day after the 4th of July, on July 5th. Is brought to you by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work with 84 Lumber. Tell you what Jonathan Mayo had to say coming up next here on 93.7 The Fan. It's the Fan Early Morning Show. I'm Austin Bechtold with you as the Pirates just have a matter of days to decide who they want to select number one overall in the 2023 MLB Draft. And it's a question that's been circling the minds of Pirates fans and baseball fans alike for weeks. A decision that may define the tenure of general manager Ben Cherington. And LSU center fielder Dylan Cruz and right-hander Paul Skenes, they've been the talk of the baseball world for the past month. That's been capped by a College World Series championship and multiple awards that are basically just too prevalent to count. Cruz and Skenes are the consensus two best players available, with Florida outfielder Wyatt Langford and high school prospects Walker Jenkins and Max Clark rounding out the top five. And MLB Pipeline's Jonathan Mayo and I had a conversation earlier this week, end of last week, to detail his thoughts on where the Pirates could go once officially on the clock on Sunday. Part of what Mayo said, quote, "I keep using the term, there's no wrong answer, and it's an interesting year where there are multiple possibilities. Guys who fit the bill to be a potential number one pick, not just those two," referring to Cruz and Skenes. I found that pretty fascinating that, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the last week that the Pirates are still looking at options outside of Cruz, outside of Skenes. It could be a smokescreen. I think it ultimately is, but more on that coming up. In MLB Pipeline's updated top 250 draft prospects, Skenes, who was the College World Series most outstanding player, ranks as the new number one player overall. Mayo's description of Paul Skenes, quote, "We haven't seen someone like him in quite some time. The ability to be a top of the rotation kind of guy. I don't like using the term ace because there aren't many of them, but he has that potential. There's a reason why scouts, whose job it is to nitpick, think he's the best pitching prospect since Steven Strasburg." And other comparisons out there that Mayo made are ranging from Mark Pryor to someone that the Pirates selected number one overall not that long ago out of UCLA in Garrett Cole. But Skenes was more dominant in his draft season at LSU than Cole was at UCLA when the Pirates took him number one overall. And the velocity that Paul Skenes continues to show, that he did show through the College World Series and throughout his entire season with the Tigers, was just insane. Skenes is 21. He's 6'6" from Lake Forest, California. He spent 2 years at Air Force, and he was a two-way guy before transferring to LSU and singularly focused on pitching. He was a catcher as well at Air Force and enjoyed catching. 6'6" catcher. Skenes became the first pitcher in 12 years to strike out 200 batters. He struck out 209 in a season, and he did so in only 122 and two-thirds innings. He walked just 20. In an LSU 6-3 win against Wake Forest in the College World Series, Skenes struck out 12 and threw 46 pitches 100 miles per hour or faster. And the crazy thing is, his slider still might even be his best pitch. Mayo quoted on the pitch, his slider, for Paul Skenes, which he doesn't throw 100, mainly like 88. "I don't even know how to describe his breaking ball. It's just stupid. His fastball is not his best pitch. It's a little true at times, and that's something he'll probably work on. The amount that he learned in this year working with the LSU coaching staff, with one of the best pitching coaches in the country, Wes Johnson, who now took a job at Georgia, he became exponentially better as a pitcher." And there are some concerns for Paul Skenes that potentially, is he just a two-pitch pitcher? What's his changeup like? But it's a potent pitch against left-handers. He is still able to use it as a plus pitch. He doesn't command it quite as well, Mayo said, but it is there. We're talking three-plus pitches, plus makeup. He checks off pretty much every box with the small exception of maybe track record. He only made 15 starts at Air Force, and during the 2021-22 campaign, delivered a 12-3 record, through 85 and two-thirds innings, 30 walks, 96 strikeouts, 117 whip. He did this while batting 314 with an OPS over 1,000, including 13 home runs and 38 RBIs. And the limited amount of time on the mound could be viewed as a negative, but it also could be viewed in a positive light due to how fresh his arm could be going into the future. He hasn't used it as much. It's not going to be as taxed as a lot of other college arms that put so much mileage on during their freshman and sophomore years. I mean, as I said, the flip side of that coin is that he showed what happened when he focused on pitching for the first time only this year. He said, "I'm not too worried about it. Anytime you're talking about a player at the top of the draft, you have to pick apart everything." I'm sure there's been some digging into all of that, but I'm not sure he's looked tired with this huge new workload. Not in the slightest. When his velocity drops, he's still sitting 98 to 100 miles an hour instead of 99 to 102. A pretty nice problem to have. Now Dylan Cruz. He's an all-around five-tool player. The ability to hit in the middle of the order for a decade. He bypassed the opportunity to jump to minor league baseball in the 2020 draft. He withdrew his name to play at LSU, an opportunity that has paid off significantly. Cruz has 3 years of track record in the best conference in college baseball. Mayo said he's done nothing but hit, driving runs, he gets on base, he's proven that he can play center field. There were some questions out of high school surrounding Cruz's ability to stick in center field for the long haul, but the 2023 Golden Spikes Award winner and Gold Glove winner has curbed those concerns through three seasons, especially with the 2023 Gold Glove. The Longwood, Florida native hit .426. 426, that's unfathomable to think of, in 71 games, 16 doubles, 18 home runs, 70 RBIs, and the walks to strikeout rate is ridiculous. He walked 71 times, struck out 46 times, 567 on base. 567 on base, that's something you find in your local wiffle ball league. 567, it's just hard to comprehend that in the best conference in college baseball, with his numbers not as great playing in SEC games, which is not that hard to truly think about because of how difficult it is to play in that conference, he also had a 1.280 OPS. Mayo said he's gotten stronger and faster. Now we're talking about an up-the-middle player who's going to hit in the middle of the lineup. His on-base skills are ridiculous. Good plate discipline. He's got on base every game this year. You know how hard it is to get on base every single game in a season? Mayo said that's crazy, considering teams probably tried to pitch him around him as well. Yeah, I mean, they definitely tried to pitch around him. That lineup was fantastic. There are a ton of good players in the LSU lineup that contributed to the championship season, the seventh ever College World Series championship for LSU. Cruz could hit his way, though, to Double-A by the start of next season after limited at-bats to conclude the current minor league campaign. But here's the kicker. Rumors are swirling and surrounding Cruz that have indicated that he wants to sign for full-slot value or even higher. Full-slot value is $9.721 million this year. That ranks over $850,000 higher than last year's slot allotment for the number one pick. And Dylan Cruz is represented by Scott Boras, who the Pirates have had trouble with in the past. Remember the Pedro Alvarez situation? Signed on the dotted line at the last hour that he could. So the center fielder's interest level in the Pirates is also in doubt. Is it a negotiation tactic and a ploy from Scott Boras and his agency to try to get the Pirates to pass on Dylan Cruz and the Washington Nationals signed him for an absurd amount of money at the number two overall pick? Definitely overslot at that point. Well, the behind-the-scenes factors are speculation, but Mayo believes that Skeens is closer than many other top pitching prospects in other recent drafts, saying he's as close to a finished product as you're going to see coming out of college. I think you see him at Double-A. You send him to Double-A to start the year. Now, he doesn't think that Skeens will pitch this summer, and whoever selects him will opt to wait until 2024 after a huge workload with LSU. I don't know how you do put Paul Skeens out there in minor league ball. If you do side sessions, bullpens, I don't know how you throw him out there in a game in Bradenton or a game in Greensboro when he's been used so much. He was throwing upwards of 120 pitches in the College World Series. That's an arm that you pick number one overall that you do not want to get any more wear and tear, even though he does not have as much innings on his arm as a lot of other college pitchers that are coming out this year. Skeens would be the number one pitching prospect in the Pirates system by a mile, ahead of Quinn Priester and rising left-hander Anthony Solomato. Now, Ben Cherington said on his radio show last week that he probably won't know who the Pirates are selecting until late on Sunday, which obviously the GM is not going to try to give anything away, partly for negotiation tactics or for, it's not like anybody else really has to be concerned with what the Pirates are doing, any other teams, but the Pirates probably don't want to give anybody else a read of what they are doing to try to start off the draft, or also give Scott Boras something else to twiddle his thumbs around and try to create another media frenzy that the Pirates will have to stay away from Dylan Cruz, which if the Pirates think Dylan Cruz is the best player on the board, they should take him. But Jonathan Mayo and some other scouts believe that Skeens could get MLB hitters out right now. And he said, like a lot of us, I'm one of them that's guilty of falling in love with Dylan Cruz and now opting really for Paul Skeens. At the moment, he's siding with the best arm in the draft. He's in Camp Skeens. And he said, just because you can't find that very often. Dylan Cruz is going to be very, very good. He may even be an all-star. He may even be a star. But you are more likely to find that kind of player again in the future. Somebody who hits in the middle of the order, who is a consistent run producer, can play a solid center field for you. But he said that all that being said, there is some inherent risk when you take a pitcher. Things could go wrong and guys break down. And if you're looking at it right now, that's got to be the only thing that really concerns you with Paul Skeens. He's as close to a finished product as Steven Strasburg, Gerrit Cole. He can get the job done to be a top-of-the-rotation guy. Both Skeens and Cruz offer intangibles any team would covet at the top of the draft. One, a potential guy that can be a horse, which every successful playoff team seems to have. And the other, a fast outfielder with range, solid bat speed to pair with Brian Reynolds through the decade. There are two guys who have performed at the highest level of college baseball, took their team to the championship, won a title. It won't take them very long to get to the big leagues. It's very, very difficult right now for the Pirates, but should it be? You have two guys that are out there from LSU that are the consensus top two guys. Don't try to convince us that Wyatt Lankford or Max Clark should be selected over these two guys. They are clearly the top two players available in the draft. There's no question about that. There's no reason to think that the Pirates should select anybody else. And I understand the whole allotment of bonus pool money, and the Pirates have about $16 million, upwards of $16 million to spend, that they can sign other guys. They have four picks in the top 75 or so. The Pirates have the availability and the opportunity to get a ton of players like they did in the 2021 draft when they signed Henry Davis, when they could have went out and got Jack Leiter from Vanderbilt, Kumar Rocker, who has not seen very good fortunes for him since the draft, but the Pirates decided to go with Henry Davis. He is one of, if not the best hitter in the Pirates order right now. Nick Gonzalez is performing well for the Buccos as well, another first-round pick who had three hits, drove in two runs last night against the Dodgers as the Pirates were able to battle their way back and win 9-7 and get to the Dodgers closer. There's the argument to be made that the Pirates should go with the everyday guy. The guy who's going to hit third, fourth, fifth in your order, maybe second. Play center field every day. Drive in upwards of 90 runs, maybe even 100 runs, and hit 20 home runs. Steal some bases. Play solid defensively. He won a gold glove in college. Or do you go with the potential number one frontline starter to pair with Mitch Keller, who they've had contract extension talks with before? And Jason Mackey talking on the Fan yesterday with Donnie Football on the 4th of July, even put it out there that you should kind of Think about the fact that the Pirates are looking in other directions other than just Skeens and Cruz. That it is possible that they do go in a different direction. Will it actually happen? Who knows? But the possibility is out there that the Pirates could go away from the two LSU stars. Now, that could be just to get the attention of Cruz and Skeens at number one. Maybe it is a smokescreen. I think it is a smokescreen to just kind of push people away from what the Pirates are looking to do right now. And part of that is all negotiation tactics. Dylan Cruz, Scott Boras, you put out there you don't really want to play for the Pirates. Well, what if we say that we want to take Max Clark, which one mock draft over the last couple of days has put out there? It's a possibility that might not happen. The Pirates will still probably select one of the two guys. Who will it be? Jonathan Mayo thinks it's Skeens. I think at this point it's Skeens. And that the Pirates will decide to just go away from Scott Boras. But not so much that. Go away from Dylan Cruz, the speculation around that. But also because they think that Paul Skeens is just that guy. That he is dominant enough on the mound that they need him. And that they think that the bats are going to play. There's nothing wrong with getting another bat in this lineup. But who is the top of the rotation starter that you see on the Pirates right now? Mitch Keller kind of got beat up on Monday against the Dodgers, not able to win that game. If there was a game that you thought the Pirates would be able to go in and win, it was that one where Clayton Kershaw was scratched, went on the IL. And it was Mitch Keller against some guy on the mound that's not Clayton Kershaw. Pirates not able to get it done in that game, but able to get it done in the second game of the series. Game three from L.A. is tonight. Osvaldo Beto on the mound. The Pirates need to continue to play the kids. Henry Davis, Nick Gonzalez playing great. It's time for Randy Rodriguez. Get Quinn Priester up here. I don't want to see Osvaldo Beto. It's just not worth it. What does he give you that Quinn Priester? I know he struggled at times in the last couple of weeks, but he's also put together some good performances as well. What does it hurt to bring Quinn Priester up here and give him a shot? Andy Rodriguez, same thing. I know he's in the All-Stars Futures game, but do you really want to not give him the opportunity to have a chance to play and a chance to be a viable member of your starting rotation where you've had injuries? Vince Velasquez is not playing. He's out for the season. JT Brubaker's been out for the season. A little bit of ineffectiveness again last night from Luis Ortiz. Rowanzi Contreras is in the bullpen trying to get right, but still has a lot of time to go before he truly is right and he truly is back to his simple ways of being a starting pitcher that can get guys out. So if you're the Pirates, neither option is a bad option unless you go with somebody outside of Cruz or Skeens, which would really set the world on fire in Pirates land. Pirates Twitter, if Twitter isn't down on that day, would go absolutely ballistic and berserk and not thrilled with the decision. That shouldn't be a factor in what the decision is for the Pirates, but it should be either Skeens or Cruz. It should be Cruz because he plays every day and just the type of player that he could bring to the lineup. He had 426. He never got out in 71 games for LSU. Now, that's not going to happen on the Pirates. That just doesn't happen in Major League Baseball. But he is somebody that you could see potentially even in the lineup in August for the Pirates next season, maybe even July, past the Super 2 deadline. He's somebody that's going to hit and hit and hit where he thought that it was so quick when Henry Davis got here in the limited at-bats that he had. It could be even quicker for Dylan Cruz. The draft is on Sunday, MLB Network and ESPN. The Pirates have a huge decision to make. A lot of people think it could be Cruz. A lot could be Skeens. Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline right now is siding with Paul Skeens. And I think that that's the direction the Pirates will go. At this rate, with Paul Skeens, the flame-throwing right-hander who threw, 40-some pitches over 100 miles an hour in the College World Series against one team. And his fastball isn't even his best pitch. The pre-show's next. I'm Austin Bechtold, 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.